The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. And as we know, this planet and our solar system, and certainly the galaxy and universe, are stranger than we, as mere mortals, or whatever we are, can imagine. It is really strange out there. And it's also darn strange down here. And we've been very fortunate to have, through the good graces of George Filer and Frank Chile, some folks coming forward recently who are sharing stories of encounters and events and sightings that they have never shared before, in many cases, or barely so. And we have another gentleman tonight, Airman Jim, who is going to join us and tell us about some things that he has seen. These are going to be very interesting and fun to get away from some of the horrible angst that is surrounding and drowning the planet 24/7. I get real tired of it. So it's always a pleasure to talk to George Filer. And Frank Chile has some amazing folks in his repertoire as well. And George, let's see if you're there. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I'm here.
What you been doing?
New Jersey.
Right near Medford, New Jersey.
Right.
Or is it? Aren't you near Medford, New Jersey? Something?
Yes, like I'm that? In Medford, New Jersey, no. Overlooking Briarwood Lake.
No, that's Lake Filer.
Right.
Don't forget that.
Had some sightings on that lake.
I know. That's a wonderful, wonderful story. It's quite a lake. And you said there are a lot of lakes in your area, and other people have reported things coming out of other lakes, too, over the years. Is that true?
Sure. Yes.
Sure. No more Nessie, no more Champ. It's now UFOs in every lake.
We had a dinner club, like 20 families would get together once a month.
Yeah,
and almost everybody lived on a lake, and almost everybody, if you started talking about it, admitted that they had all seen UFOs either flying by their homes over the lake or coming in and out of the lakes.
That's fascinating. What is your guess?
Centennial Lake.
Yeah. What is your guess that they're going into the lake just to lay low for the night? Or the day, rather, and then they come out at night? Or are they going into some network of tunnels in there?
I think it's most likely that there is some kind of network of tunnels. Well, we found that, at least in other places, there'd be a lot of caverns. For example, get a lot of reports from Puerto Rico, and it turns out there's many caverns
there
in history. And then up near Lake Erie in Ohio, there's caverns.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would suggest that they have to be big enough for these craft at least to maneuver into and park and the occupants get out and do whatever it is they're doing down there. So there's something.
I have a hunch they have the ability to make the caverns as well. So.
As big as they want, sure. Well, why not? I think the lake water would go down, but maybe over time it doesn't. Who knows? It's, like I say, it's imponderably strange and bizarre. All right, let's see if Frank is there standing by. Are you there, Mr. Chili?
I'm here. Good evening and happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday to you, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for this opportunity to share again with you and your audience.
Well, it's always fun. Since George introduced you to our program and our audience, we've met some very interesting people, and you have so many stories of your own. It's always fun to, like I say, break away from the angst and anguish and all the death and horror that's just surrounding the planet. I don't know how much longer we can go on like this, but I don't think it's too much longer, frankly. Somebody's got to give. All right, so what do we have on tap tonight, Frank?
Well, we have an interesting individual that I met, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Jeff. Met him at a gathering of like-minded individuals, and mm-hmm. we shared some information, and he shared some extraordinary stories that he had experiences of while in service in California.
Airman Jim.
We bonded. We would share phone calls, and not only UFOs, but we're into music. He's a great singer. He's a fan of doo-wop music, and so am I, you know, vocal group Harmony. And he's really a really nice guy, and thank goodness he was willing to come forward this evening and share some of his experiences in the military, which for your audience is going to be a first time hearing this.
Oh, that's very nice. Are you there, Airman Jim?
I sure am. How you guys doing?
We're great. Thank you. Thanks so much for being here and for agreeing to share some things that a lot of folks, quite frankly, experience, maybe not like yours, maybe somewhat similar, and never talk about them throughout their entire lives. They don't. They don't mm-hmm. even tell their spouses about it. So
yeah,
we appreciate that. Now, what's this about doo-wop music?
Well, I was at the gathering, and some of the guys were singing doo-wop, and, well, I'm from Philadelphia originally, and
are you?
I started doo-wopping right along with them, and, boy, I tell you, they said, how long you been doing that? I said, first time, really. I'm just doing it in the shower, you know. They said, well, we really enjoy it, and the more we were getting into it, well, we had a great time.
Oh, that's wonderful. Philadelphia is, I don't have to tell you, but for our listeners who may not know, the birthplace of so many talented, popular singers and groups over the years. Just amazing numbers of them. And, of course, at the top of the list, my list, is Mario Lanza.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. It's all there. That's fun. All right. You were in the Air Force for how long?
Well, I went in 1960, and I was getting out a few months early because of hardship. My dad was very sick. I put in, about 3.5 years. Yeah, I was in, I got in Strategic Air Command. At first, Yeah, I don't know how I did that. I really don't. I went in, I had to quit school early because I'm 72 now. But back then, you know, to try to help my pop out and everything. And, well, anyway, I wanted to get in the service. So I tried, and I was very pleased to get in the Air Force. I went to Lackland, naturally, for my training. And then I went to Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois for my automotive tech school. And after that, they said, hey, you're going out to a brand-new SAC base, Strategic Air Command, brand-new base in California near Marysville. And we had B-52s and KC-135s. And it was so clean and new that Rock Hudson, rest his soul, decided to make a movie called A Gathering of Eagles. And they filmed it right on our base, Universal International Movie Pictures, and brought the tractor trailers in, you know, and, you know, they all have their
little, what a great thing to be able to watch.
Oh, it was wonderful. Something to write home about, you know?
Oh, sure. Did you meet Rock?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I had a little, I was in a little band out there. I had a 61 Stratocaster, and God rest its soul. But anyway, I played a little guitar, you know, and sat in with a few groups. And then when they had the big premiere on the base, we got to meet them. Because they heard me playing over at this little nightclub in town in Marysville called the Ming Tree. And so we got to meet Rock Hudson, Mary Peach, Barry Sullivan, Henry Silva, Robert Lansing of 12 O'Clock High was in
sure.
it, you know. And,
yeah.
Oh, what a great movie.
And, an interesting story. Now,
yeah.
Rock Hudson, as we know, well, most of us know about Rock and his life and so forth.
Yeah, we do now, you know.
That's not the issue. The issue was,
no.
as a talent and a motion picture star, he was mm-hmm. one of the kind of the last of the larger-than-life folks that really walked the hallowed halls of Hollywood, so to speak. What was he like personally? He was kind of a tall fellow.
Yeah, he seemed like a very nice person. I just got to shake his hand. We had the premiere, like I said, we had it at our base theater,
mm-hmm.
and he thanked everybody, and they had a comedian come out. The guy that used to do, Charlie Tuna, and did all the voices and everything. And Mel Blanc, he was our, you know.
Mel Blanc was there.
Oh, yeah. He performed for us, you know, and then he introduced Rock Hudson and Rod Taylor came out the other side of the stage, and then Mary Pete, it was her first American movie. And it was just a thrill because Rock Hudson was number one box office at the time.
Huge.
And when my mother heard that I even got near him, oh, my goodness, you're kidding, you know.
Yeah.
And then years later, naturally, the little rumors come out. But, I mean, when he was filming, he didn't know his lines that well. They said, you know, he was kind of stubborn. Rod Taylor did. But I drove the staff car for the commander. I was in the motor pool,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't crazy about being a mechanic. I never liked getting real dirty. Uh-huh. But I volunteered for all the red ball runs. That means when we were going to have an ORI inspection or an mm-hmm. alert, I would go and pick up his staff car because it was the greatest car on the base, and we'd keep it perfect. And
what was
I'd take
it?
It
what
on
kind
the
of car
ball
was
run,
it?
Like at 1 o'clock in the morning down to Mather Air Force Base, pick up parts.
Uh-huh.
For our B-52s or our missiles or whatever I needed to do.
What was the staff car, the great staff car?
We had a 62 Ford Fairlane 500.
Oh, yeah.
What a vehicle.
Yeah, that, the Galaxy.
In them days, that was the top shelf, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But
now,
that was
one
had,
question
you know.
about
yeah.
Rock Hudson. It's always said that, oh, it's all camera angles and lighting and all that. Well, that's true to an extent, but in person, how did he look? Did he look pretty good? Like
very, very good, very fit, you know, and taller than most guys, you know. And he just exhumed a lot of personality. He was a nice person, yeah.
Very nice.
He was comical on the stage when he was talking about the movie and very happy that we decided to have it made there, you know, and parts of it was made in San Francisco. I really recommend the movie to anybody that's never seen it, A Gathering of Eagles.
So I've heard of it. So they came back
movie.
Up there to premiere the film for you guys on the base.
Yeah, they had a grand party for us. They put in a pool at the over there for the officers up at the alert station, you know, and a snack bar here and there, you know, and so forth. I got to drive the car across the flight line in one scene, but you couldn't tell it was me, so, you know, all I can say was I got check from Universal International for $15, you know, in them days, 1963. That was, you know, that's like about $50 now, you know.
Well, now if you
but
had
some
to
of the guys on our base really got in the movie, and they had parts where they couldn't speak, but, you know, B-52, like the guy in the boom and KC-135, they got in it, you know.
Nice. What a nice story.
Yeah.
Now if you had the check, you probably wouldn't cash it.
You're right. And, you know, it's funny. That's my bank today.
Now,
up
that,
here in the East Coast. I do belong to Wells Fargo, and I tell them that story, and they laugh, you know.
That's funny. The one movie I remember specifically, I'm not sure if I've seen Gathering of Eagles. I don't think I did. But there was one before that, and was it John Wayne?
No,
it was all about B-36s.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Stewart was in
Jimmy Stewart,
Strategic Air Command. Yeah,
and that film
was a great movie.
That airplane was a great airplane. Did you see any of those around still?
Yeah, I had one right outside my window at Chanute. It was 38 feet short because it crashed, and they put it on like a display right outside our barracks at Chanute Air Force Base. So I got to see that B-36 a lot. You know.
Wow. What an amazing aircraft.
First he flew that one, then he flew the B-47. Jimmy Stewart was a great colonel in the Air Force. And
he flew, wait. He flew the B-36?
Oh, yeah, he was a colonel in the Air Force, in the National I guess it was the National Guard.
Well, I know he was in World War II. And
oh, yeah, and he was a definite Air Force colonel. He flew a lot of... Yeah.
He flew the 36 and the 47?
Oh, sure he did.
Oh, fascinating.
And I think he even got into the B-52, and he flew the B-58 Hustler. I just saw that last night on YouTube.
Was he in that film, too?
What's that?
Was he in that film?
He wasn't in our film, no.
The B-58 Hustler.
Oh,
you just saw it in a clip. Yeah.
Yeah, he flew, he brought it in for a landing and talked about it on a YouTube clip I saw last night. Yeah, it was a documentary.
Well, that's fascinating. That the Hustler was
what a plane.
Our first hypersonic heavyweight bomber. I guess it did, Mach 2, Mach 2.5, something like that.
Oh, yeah, it went from California to New York in like 2 hours. Perfect.
Then it had to do Mach 3.
Yeah, about Mach 3. Mm-hmm.
That was a hot plane.
We have things out there now that are 50 years ahead of what people see are flying. You know what I mean? And, you know, the gathering of eagles has a lot to do with my UFO sighting.
Okay.
Because 17 of us were out there having a cigarette at Beale one night, watching a B-52 and a KC-135 refueling for part of the movie. Okay. And Delbert Mann was the producer of that film, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, after it started getting dark, so we were out there having a cigarette. You know, we had just bought a fresh carton of cigarettes for $2 a carton at the PX.
That's when everybody
was
still smoking.
And we were celebrating, having a good time.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the guys' birthday. Anyway, I saw this light come out of the sky, and it caught my eye because I was in Ground Observer Corps before I went in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was a long time ago. Like I say, I'm 72 now, so we're talking 52 years ago, my sighting.
Sure.
So we're standing out there, and this thing comes out of the sky and does a kind of a loop and stops.
Jim, what day?
It was just starting to get nice and dark, you know.
Okay, twilight. All right.
Yeah,
Twilight.
A little darker than that. The stars, you can see the stars, so it was dark enough to see the stars. But this thing was brighter than any star, and when it stopped, I thought, what the heck is that? And then it zoomed off. I mean, like a bat out of, you know. And I said, you know what, guys? I'm going in the barracks. I'm going to ask the CQ if I can use the phone and call the tower and see if they know anything about this.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. I went in anyway. So I asked the CQ. He said, what's up? What's up? I said, let me have the phone. I called the tower, and I said, this is Airman so-and-so. I said, I just spotted what looks like a UFO and this and that, and it was dead silent. And the guy on the other end said, just a minute. A captain got on the phone and said, Airman, you didn't see a thing. Got it? Nothing. Click. Wow.
Well,
the next day, it was a Friday night. The next day, Saturday, I went into Marysville, and the guy used to let me in the movies because I gave him a big picture of a B-52 and a refueling KC-135 for his office.
Uh-huh.
And we became friends, and he always used to let me in the movies. So I'd shared the story with him, not meaning to do anything wrong, but somehow some of the ushers heard me talking about it. My commander, my squadron commander, calls me in Monday morning early, and he says, I want to see you in blues, dressed blues, 9 o'clock a.m., sharp. Okay, sir, I come in there. He says, what's this about talking about UFO? I said, well, sir, I said, just was mentioning it to, he said, you talked to some civilians about this? Don't you realize the security? We're in SAC. You don't discuss this ever again. I could court-martial you for this.
Oh,
I was scared.
Oh,
I was like 18. I was scared. I was a kid.
Yeah, sure.
And he said,
this is after the captain had told you. This is after the captain at CQ had told you. And you didn't.
Right.
All right, you're off base. You know, you feel. I got it. I got it.
You know what I mean? And
they got ears everywhere, apparently.
Oh, yeah. We were always on high alert, you know. And like I said, a new SAC base and everything. We had a missile squadron up at Chico, California that was part of our division. You know, there's ICBMs. Uh-huh. And
now, wait a minute.
Anyway,
hold on.
Yeah.
I got two questions. One,
sure.
How do you think they found out about you talking in the theater?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of was the usher. One of them must have said something because his dad was in the Air Force. And he was a Air Force brat, and he was working in the theater. I found out later.
All right.
So he might have told his dad, and his dad might have,
That's fascinating. Okay, now, second question. You just said there was a base at Chico And you said ICBMs. Now, I have never heard of an ICBM installation anywhere near Chico.
Red Bluff, Chico, we had a lot of secret stuff going on. We had underground silos, which are vacant today. Some guys even bought them up and are making underground apartments with them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So this,
you know what I mean now?
Yeah, these are the old Atlas rockets.
That's right, the Atlas missiles. You got it.
And they put them, I didn't know they put them at Chico. George Filer, have you ever heard of Atlas ICBMs near Chico? I'm not saying Airman Jim doesn't know, but I have never heard of this. Chico and Red Bluff, that's near Redding. That's an interesting area of Northern California.
Yeah,
have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, Redding,
oh, sure.
That's right. I remember Redding, California mentioned,
George Filer, have you ever heard of that before, ICBMs?
No, I haven't. I used to fly in the different bases there, but I was flying in, you know, in the 70s, so that might have been gone by then.
70s, yeah. I don't know when they closed them up, but one day I won Airman of the Month because my barracks was spotless in my room, and he said, what do you want to do? You know, you got your choice. I said, I want to get in one of them H-19 helicopters over there and take a ride. So he said, just happens to be we're going up to the missile silo, but you can't get off the plane, off the helicopter, because you don't have a clearance. You just have a flight line clearance for here. So you'll have to sit in the craft until we pick up our package and come back. And that's what we did. We flew up there to, I'm pretty sure it was either Chico or Red Bluff, somewhere like that. The Buttes, B-U-T-T-S, I remember that name.
Hmm.
Buttes, California, is there something like that?
Anyway,
I'll do some research on it, but I know it was one of them little areas up there where we had to land and pick up a package. And on the way back, we hovered for a while, and I said, what's going on? Well, we couldn't hear because we had the headphones on. The thing was noisy. You know, those old helicopters, single blade. Anyway, it was a Sikorsky. Anyway, here we dropped the line down and helped rescue a civilian that was capsized in his rowboat. And that made the headlines in the Marysville Times that weekend.
Interesting. What you're talking about is, I believe, Butte County, wherein
Butte County,
Chico, Chico and Paradise, California, are located. Red Bluff is just in the next county over, right off I-5.
Yeah.
I honestly have never heard that we had Atlas underground ICBM bunkers there, and I've heard a lot of things. Neither has George Filer, so very interesting indeed.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me get Frank in here for a second. Frank, have you ever heard of an ICBM base in California?
No, I haven't. Not in that area. Nope.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, the underground facilities are still there, and they do sell them off. In fact, Peter Davenport bought one up in eastern Washington State. Yeah.
Huh.
It's a lot of work to get them rehabbed, but people have done it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hold on a minute, Airman Jim, and Frank and George and I will be right back.
This is fun. I enjoy this.
Oh, this is, we're having a great time. Stand by. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Okay, now this is amazing. While we've been on break, I've been doing a little quick researching, and I did a search for missile silos in Northern California, and I'm looking right now at a helicopter flying over and in the Buttes, they call them, in Butte County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a one-man helicopter. It's a little, almost like a hang glider with a motor. Anyway, this guy's flying over and the abandoned missile silo complex with the big doors on them, flat on the ground, round doors.
Right.
And they were for the, I guess at the time, the first ones were the Titan ICBM missile.
That's right. That's what we had.
And this is amazing. There's no narration or I'd play it, but this guy is flying a winged hang glider with a motor, and I don't know how many silos there must be, maybe half a dozen, three, four at least.
We had one blow up, and we had six, one blew up, so we were really worried about the Cold War at the time because Russia was acting up, as you know, and so losing one of them was big-time problem.
So one of them blew in the silo.
Yeah, blew up inside the silo.
It must have been liquid fueled.
I hope I'm not giving out too much bad information here.
No.
But, I mean, this isn't top secret stuff anymore, you know.
No, it's ancient history.
You could see this on the internet.
Well, this guy's flying right over it. There are no restrictions.
Yeah.
He's just right down.
Well, that's true, too, you know. But, I mean, as far as what I'm telling you about Arbeel, because we were a top secret base. We flew the Chrome Dome. You know what Chrome Dome is? Operation Chrome Dome, where two B-52s are in the air 24/7.
Uh-huh.
One lands, one takes off.
Yeah. Well, they still have that now, I think.
Well, I think probably.
Yeah, the guy's just going over two of them right now, and the doors, rectangular doors, and they slide right open.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing. George Filer, I never knew this, and I'm from California, and this was obviously kept pretty well secret. Nobody talked about it. They talked
about
them in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Well, okay, very good. Paris. Yeah, go ahead.
I was flying over those missile sites as well.
Say again? UFO.
Yeah, the UFOs used to fly over the missile sites and sometimes
close
them down.
They shut us down. They actually shut us down twice.
Oh, they did they? Malmstrom. Air Force Base. They shut them down there. Wasn't that it,
that's
George?
Right.
Yeah, that's one of the bases.
And now so you heard stories, Airman Jim, about UFOs with this particular base in the Buttes?
You don't have to say any more if
you're not comfortable. That's fine.
A couple of years ago, I was talking to a bird colonel in the hospital. I was in a hospital with him, and he was in the Army, okay? I guess you call it a bird colonel. Whatever way, he was almost a general. And he told me, he said, you know, it's exciting talking about UFOs because I'll tell you right now, man, he said, where were you at? And I said, Beale. He said, well, Beale was one of the bases, too. When Russia ignited a 100-megaton bomb, I think it was in 62, he said, remember how hot that summer got? And I said, well, I was there in California. Our base went up 15 degrees on the flight line. And that lasted for 3 days. He said, well, a UFO flew over your base first, and when you guys were ready to go on alert, but they love flying over military installations, he said you couldn't operate your missile silos and you couldn't get off the ground. And that was only kept quiet for just so many years. And then, you know, as guys retired, they would talk about it.
This is extraordinary. This is extraordinary. George, I have, as you have, heard all about Malmstrom and other bases that have been interfered with hovering UFOs over them. And apparently now, from what we're hearing, this may have been a lot more common than even we know, if this bird colonel is talking about it like that. That's an extraordinary story, Airman Jim.
Yeah.
Not only that, as I talked to some Soviet colonels, you know, after the
Cold War,
the Cold War was over, and they indicated that not only were they shutting down some of their equipment, but they were destroying some of it.
Well, talk about trying to get the message across. I guess that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I will. I'm going to forward this video to Frank and George, and they can send it on to you, Airman Jim, and you can take a look at this.
That'd be great.
I'm still looking at it. It's very interesting.
Well, I have my two lectures that I did in 2007. The guide made them for me on VHS, and I had them transponded over to DVD. So what I'd like to do is make a copy of those. One is on my military experience, uh-huh. and then the other one was on our missing time experience with my wife and I. We lost 3 hours and 15 minutes five-minute time frame.
Well, we're going to talk about that when we get to that. So you've shared the first event. Was it, what color light was it over the base?
It was just a real bright, shiny beam of light, like twice as bright as a star. It was a bright star, like the North Star. And it moved, and when it came in and slowed down and just stopped, and we kept looking, what the heck is that stopping like that? And then it just like made a little bit of a turn and zoom. I said, uh-oh, we don't have nothing like that, guys, nothing. Well, I was kind of the senior teenager at the time, you might say, you know. I was going on 18, but I mean, the guys were like a little younger than me. And I already had my two stripes, you know. Well, I was asked after my third stripe, but I never got it. They never promoted me, my airman first class, you know. So, I mean,
too honest.
I was lucky I didn't get court-martialed. You know that?
Yeah.
I really was.
Well, you know, these things are so incredibly mind-boggling. I don't know how they expect people not to talk to somebody about them. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That is a remarkable story. Okay, let's move on to the second event that you have.
Jeff, he didn't finish with that. There were consequences that the base commander gave him.
Yeah, I had another consequence. They rushed me. He said to me, you know what? I'm going to send you to Goose Bay, Labrador. I said, is that for punishment? He said, not really, but it's like Russia's Siberia. If you don't like the cold, you're going to hate it up here. But I need you. Morale is bad up there, and you got a guitar. You can play it. They need somebody to fill in with the band up there when you're off duty. And he said, I'm sending you there for another reason. Your dad is very sick. I see by your records you've been home 3 times on emergency leave. That's why you got set back a week in basic training. You got set back a week in your mechanic tech school because you had to go home on emergency leave and you couldn't graduate with your class. So I'm sending you to a SAC base up at Goose Bay. That's Labrador above Newfoundland.
Yeah.
I said, oh, wow. He said, well, it's better than being court-martialed, Airman, and I could even have you imprisoned for talking about a UFO. Did you know that? And I said, no, sir. Boy, I was standing tall, man. I was sweating. I was scared.
Unbelievable.
I was scared.
Yeah, well.
So then he says to me, you got to get a physical. You're shipping out in a couple of days. You're getting a physical and a dental checkup. Mm-hmm. I went in to get a dental checkup. They pulled a molar in the back by mistake, pulled one that was bad, a wisdom tooth, and then actually they extracted 4 teeth, 2 wrong ones, and 2 that had to be taken out. And I went back to the barracks. I laid down. I was so tired from all the, you know, the drugs and everything. And here the sutures came loose, and I started to hemorrhage. I was bleeding on my pillow, my mattress. If my roommate didn't leave his watch by mistake and come back to the barracks to get it, he found me. He called the taxis everybody around the base. They took me to the hospital, and darn if they didn't keep me in for 2 days for that. You know, now today that's malpractice.
Wait, it's malpractice. Do you think it was? Do you suspect anything nefarious?
Well, I was told years later, you know what, Jim? They might have tried to quiet you down. I said, you're kidding. You don't think so? Well, I've done a few lectures in my time because I'm a kind of a UFO investigator with a couple of groups, and so I consider myself, you know, in the know. I mean, I don't just know about UFO. I can tell you anything you want to know about any conspiracy. I'm up on the whole thing. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've had enough, you know, lies. I want the truth.
Yeah, I know
we're not alone. Believe me, we're not alone, gang. We got trillions of star systems out there.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course. You know
how many
that,
billion planets just in our galaxy,
you
George
bet.
Filer.
And the further they look, the more they find.
Yeah. Billions.
Oh, billions, yeah.
It's absurd to think. If we are the only game in town, God help us. That's all I can say.
You better believe it.
Okay, well, this is fascinating. We've got to pause here and see if we can catch the last bit of our little break. Hold on, and we'll come right back.
All righty.
Okay, and welcome back. George Filer, Frank Chile, and Airman Jim. Hearing some remarkable things already. I'm looking at a helicopter flight with a lot of still pictures over the Sutter Buttes and the Titan missile silos. I haven't gotten to the silos yet. I'm just looking. But I'll send you what I found. Apparently, these are known to the locals, but not new to me. It's quite a remarkable story. Okay, it could. I hate to think about this, but the idea of them accidentally pulling, this is all at the same session in the dentist?
Well,
four teeth?
Yeah, I had a couple of them filled. He had me in a chair for 4 hours. They told me the night before, don't eat breakfast in the morning. I said, why? You're going to be under medication, possibly. We don't know. You know, we see your dental records. You know, you've been dodging this boy, and I have, because I'm afraid of dentists at 17. I had a bad experience. But I dodged every time I was supposed to get a dental checkup. Well, they caught up with me, and they said, you're going to Labrador. They don't have good dental facilities up there. Get it all done now. I said, okay, sir. Well, you have to say, okay, sir. You're a government issue. That's what GI means. They own you. So there I am, 4 hours and 10 minutes in a chair, and I couldn't, you know, say that hurt or this hurt or that hurt. And when after it dawned on me, why didn't they want me to eat? I didn't eat anything.
Well, any general anesthesia, you're not allowed to eat before because you can start vomiting, and then you can choke.
They didn't know they were going to have to pull teeth, did they?
Well,
or maybe they did.
I don't understand how any dentist, even then in the military, could accidentally pull two teeth, wrong teeth, and then accidentally get it right. It's just weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I had a test on my body one time, and I have 7 implants.
Oh, well, they've
had fun. 2 are in the head area, 1 is in one arm, mm-hmm. 1 is in each leg. I mean, this was at a UFO big conference one time. The guy had a machine, mm-hmm. and he tested everybody. He tested a girl first, and she had 4, and he says, oh, I think I found somebody that flies a UFO. No, I think somebody, and then when he tested me, he said, I think I found the pilot. Just joking. But they took a picture of me having this electronic device over my body. I had to take everything metal off my body, my rings and everything. Yeah. And then he did the test.
He scanned.
But, this is extensive talking about this stuff. I could write a book, Jeff. I really could. And
well,
I think I will someday.
Well, you should. It's an absolutely fascinating story.
Yeah, we have a big family gathering coming up with 93 members of the family down near Philly. And they're all begging me because I'm the oldest one in the family, in the clan. Firstborn male, and I'm his son. So they said, yeah, you should write a book so we have your memoirs.
Well, I think so. I do. I hope you do. All right. Let's move on with your next encounter. Anything you want to add to this, Frank Chile, by the way, before we move?
No, I'm just hoping that Jim could get to these 3 other experiences.
Yeah, we'll make it. We've got another hour, so we'll get there.
Okay.
Okay, Airman Jim, go right ahead with number 2.
Okay, well, are you talking about a sighting or the missing time?
Well, you choose. You tell us.
Okay, up in Labrador, I was so scared to talk about UFOs that, you know, that's a cold area, and we had the Aurora Borealis up there all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, we had 211 centimeters of snow the winter I was there. And I'm talking about 40, 50 below zero wind chill factors. People in this part of the United States never heard of wind chill factors in the 60s. Now we do. It's common. Now where I live now, we had 17 below, you know, a couple of days. Now, up there, I was looking out there one night, and I saw a UFO, and I was scared to talk about it. Then about a month and a half later, 2 of us were walking to the base, chow hall, my buddy and I, and it was late because we were on a later shift, and it was snowing, and then it kind of stopped snowing, and we're looking up, and the clouds are all green and yellow in this aurora, you know, and we saw this thing streak across, and then about 5 minutes later, it went in the other direction. I said, no, wait a minute, shooting stars don't do that. He said, oh, man, could that be a UFO? I say, be quiet. We're in the Air Force. Don't say a word. Believe me, that's why I got stationed here talking about it. So we didn't say nothing, you know. But I talked to a couple of the pilots after they... See, I was up there during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I had to pull barracks guard for all the bomber pilots, okay, the KC-97s and so forth, mm-hmm. and some of the fighter pilots that flew the F-102s. And when they got a little intoxicated, because we were having barracks parties, you know, they had to stay there and on alert. And we got talking about this and that, you know, and some of them said, you'd be surprised what we see. And that's as far as they'd go. You would be surprised what's out there, buddy. And I said, well, that's why I got stationed here, because I was at Beale. And one of the captains said to me, he was at Beale about the same time. And he said, there was more than that going on there, but nobody knew about it.
Is that why he was up there? Did they boot him up there too?
Yeah, and then he became a pilot for they put him on refuelers, KC-97s.
Yeah.
And I think he had a problem with drinking, so they took him off to KC-135, and he got stationed up there. In fact, he was the same pilot that flew me home when I was leaving Labrador on my birthday, January the 11th, 1964. I'll never forget it. As soon as we got the wheels up and locked, they called a whiteout because it was snowing like a son of a gun. We left. And we got back to, the McGuire, and landed there, and it was just a little snow in the ground. But I was glad to be back in the world, I'll tell you. I really was. After 15 months of Labrador, I had it.
What an extraordinary story.
I formed a little band called Jimmy D and the Rhythm Rockers. Uh-oh, I gave away part of my last name. Anyway, Jimmy D and the Rhythm Rockers, and I had a 61 Stratocaster.
Now, imagine anybody named Jimmy Rocker. Well, that's all right.
Jimmy D
and
the Rhythm
for
Rockers.
You. All right.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
here's this one. Now, get this one. I'm going to send this to you, too.
Okay.
This has to do with the Titan silo
mm-hmm.
in the Buttes near
mm-hmm.
Chico.
Right.
Now, hold on.
Thank you, Lord, for backing me up.
this is very good. All right. I'm going to read this. There are pictures, too. Until construction was complete, the workers and engineers actually controlled the base. When it was finally finished, controls were turned over to the 851st Strategic Missile Squadron at Beale Air Force Base in Marysville, under the Strategic Air Command. Right.
Yep.
It was during this time, leading up to the command handoff, that one of the worst nuclear accidents in our mm-hmm. country's history took place. I've never heard anything about this. During the early morning of May 24th, 1962, Joe Harrington, a safety engineer, was performing atmospheric tests in the missile silos during a fuel and unfuel procedure. These were liquid fuel rockets.
Yeah.
This was the final inspection, and they had the warheads on them.
That's
thermonuclear warheads on the missiles.
That's
we didn't
right.
like that idea that the warheads were on there because any little thing could set them off. But we were just workers there, laborers, Contreras mm-hmm. recalled. We just worked there and stayed out of the Air Force's way. In mm-hmm. silo number one, tests showed abnormally high liquid oxygen levels, which Harrington reported to his supervisors over several days. This went on and on. When they finally went down to the bottom of the silo, they discovered that ice had begun to form all around the base of the missile from a mm-hmm. valve not properly closed. Harrington's supervisor reportedly kicked the ice at the base of the missile and watched it shatter on the floor. They then began ascending the six flights of stairs to the top of the silo when they came across a white misty cloud seeping out of one of the liquid oxygen lines connected to the missile. The two rushed up the remaining stairs to warn the rest of the facility as dark, thick smoke began pluming out of silo number one. Harrington hastened his attempts at evacuating base personnel into a single large elevator that led to the surface. After he squeezed everybody into the elevator, there wasn't any room left for him. So he ran up the auxiliary stairwell, assisted by a failing breathing mask, inhaling the black smoke all the rest of the way up and to safety. At 7:08 a.m., just after everybody got safely to the surface, the missile exploded, destroying the silo and sending large fragments of metal and rock skyward, with chunks and bits of debris raining on the countryside as far away as a quarter mile. The two silo doors, each weighing 116 tons each, were flung open like saloon doors. The silo itself channeled the explosion force straight into the air, acting like an underground cannon. When that silo blew up, it blew those doors right open and scattered the cement all over the north of Chico, Contreras recalled. It was a mess. There were over 100 men working on that shift, but nobody got hurt. No one died from the explosion, but nearly 60 men were treated at Enlo Medical Center for minor injuries and smoke inhalation. Fire erupted during the defueling of a propellant terminal at the Titan missile base that morning, causing the explosion that damaged the silo and a missile, destroyed two Quonset huts some 500 feet away, and sent 59 civilian workers to the hospital, said Contreras. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's more, but you get the story. We had a fully armed George Titan nuclear ICBM blow up in its silo.
Yep.
And when you see the pictures of this, nobody's talking in this article about radiation or radioactivity yet, but I haven't finished it. Extraordinary. All right, we have another hour to go, so stand by, and we will continue in just a few minutes.